Go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join the madness.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. I am your host, J. Daniel Sawyer, and today I have with me frequent questioner and dictation enthusiast, Tim, who wanted to come on and talk about his dictation habits and how they've been changing. Tim has written to us several times over the last year talking about his experiments in dictation, doing long-form type of fiction and roughing stuff out at an incredible speed. And so I would love, Tim, for you to tell us the whole story. How'd you get into it? What did you discover? And where are you at now?
Well, the funny thing about my dictation story is my successful dictation story, because I should say I had the software for a long time, a few years before I really did anything with it. The Dragon naturally speaking software that people use to dictate. But I had to upgrade that anyway. So I got Dragon Professional, which would let me dictate away from the computer. That's the version for people, you know, who are just hearing about it for the first time. That's the version of the speech-to-text software for the PC, I think it is mostly. Professional version lets you dictate somewhere else, record a file, an MP3, and upload that to be transcribed. And that's how I wanted to do it all along. But that version is very expensive compared to the ordinary version. So I hadn't bitten that bullet until... this is where the story really gets good. The CPAP machine. Because I suffer from a lot of problems. Anyway, so I had to get a CPAP machine. In 2019? Yeah, I guess so. I got a CPAP machine for the first time.
How did the CPAP affect your...
I had not written anything. I was typing. I was not going anywhere. I've been typing for 20 years, 18 years, some large amount of time. I've been typing novels for 18 years at this point. So 16 years back then. And it was just about the start of summer. 2019. I don't know. This is rambling. This is going to be a longer episode, perhaps. But if I keep talking like this, it sure is. But the
thing. Well, you're a writer. We can forgive that. You know.
Yeah, and I'm used to babbling anything that comes to my head because of dictation. And that's how I. That's because eventually that was the technique I hit on. Spoiler alert. That's beautiful down the line. But first night I was on the CPAP, I slept for 3 hours, and then I felt so good that I just got up and ran around practically because I hadn't had a good night's sleep in maybe 5 years.
And it was only 3 hours.
Yeah. Holy shit. I mean, admittedly, that was probably just me being crazy and not really being comfortable with the CPAP machine. I'm still using that. That is really good. That really turned my change. That was a switch that flipped and my life changed as well. Like when I started taking some of the different prescriptions I started taking back, you know, I can remember like, oh, it was like night and day, completely different. And then I said, I'm still stuck on writing. I'm still not going that fast. Because I mean, obviously, I'm trying to make a career of writing books, and if you can't write it, if you can't type the words, you're not going to get very far doing that.
Right.
So I said, let's try dictation because I have the software now, or I went and I got the software now. So now I got it, and I got a nice. I don't remember how I started dictating originally. I think originally I was dictating into the computer. I tried that, and it was not any faster than typing. Let me put it that way for me. It was like I could get maybe 2,000 words an hour on a good hour. But then, and this is the funny thing, then I'm like, okay, eventually, so I talked to people in my writing group at the time, and I told them I'm dictating, and this is a group I would run out of the Dead Robot Society Facebook group, just so people know, though I no longer do that. It was cool at the time. But anyway, the point is, I ended up eventually getting a little handheld voice recorder that had a USB plug at the bottom that I could just talk into. And that's how I started really dictating. And I could get initially 4,000 or 5,000 words an hour with that because I wasn't looking at anything.
Damn.
And I just talk fast, as you probably have gathered already, listeners here. But I can talk even faster when I'm dictating. And eventually I would get up to 5,000 or 6,000 words an hour. One time I did 7,000 words in 1 hour. This is kind of insane. I think I only did it once. And I went on like that, but this is the roughest draft you can imagine. Because also I write fantasy and weird sci-fi that has a lot of made up shit in it. You know, it's like space opera, that kind of thing. Oh, I hope I forgot about this is a fairly clean show. So
no, that's okay. I'll bleep. Okay, I already swore once. That's why I keep the bleep tracking.
Yeah.
I'm from California. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I know it doesn't bother you, but your podcast is a family friendly podcast. I don't think, whatever. Yeah. So I did that, and then I dictated the first novel I did dictation was Demon Scroll, and I dictated that. That was 100,000 words in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty good. I mean, that's the fastest I've ever dictated, I've ever written any book.
Really stunning, actually.
It was actually 110,000 because I had 7,000, and then I dictated about 55,000 words a week, but with 1 week in the middle where I did a short story and took a break. So I guess it was 3 weeks. It was almost a month, but then I had a month to edit it because I'd been in my insanity set up a pre-order for that book. 2 months out, 3 months out, the 3 months out at the time on Amazon, because I'm like, I haven't finished this book, but let's see if I can make myself finish it.
I tried that once and I missed it and I lost pre-order privileges for a year and a half.
No, this story continues. So anyway, I did get that pre-order. I hit that pre-order, but it was not a great, I didn't do a great job editing the book because I didn't know what was going to go into it. And so I should have known better. I have edited that book since then. I think it's pretty solid now, but it took a lot of time to edit. And that's the thing that I should have known right away, because it took, you know, I add 5,000 or 6,000 words an hour. It only took 22 hours to dictate that book, I think. But it took 100 hours to edit it, maybe 120,
mm-hmm.
which is longer than it would take me to type a novel and edit it, which is why I've kind of stopped dictating. Because I have to take a different approach.
I went fast, but you just, even when you're typing, you go way faster than me.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not that fast of a typist. And I'm also slow by day. Like, I don't do that much every day.
Oh, okay.
I'm bad at working. That's why one of the reasons I hit on dictation is I was doing like 2 hours of work a day, 3,000 or 4,000 words by typing. And then I would only do 2 hours a day of dictation, end up with 12,000 words.
I'll do 3,000 or 4,000 words a day, but it takes me 4 or 5 hours usually.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, your books are different than mine, but mind you, I don't look at notes or anything. I'm discovery writing the whole way, but so do you. You do the cycling, the stuff.
Thing, yeah, I'm just, I do a lot of thought organizing. Mm. It's, you know, 500 or 600 words in 20 minutes, and then there's a lot of sitting around and sort of mulling and letting it form, and then another dump. So it's very like,
I actually kind of envy that, because one of the problems I ran into with any of my writing is that I try to measure everything. Like, they tell you to do in all these writing productivity stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that's why I can tell you I was doing 6,000 words an hour pretty reliably when I was dictating, because I have a spreadsheet I think at one point I had a spreadsheet. I kind of lose each spreadsheet little by little because I'm bad at organization, but I do keep track somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I can, I set up a pre-order for the second book in the series, Shadow Prince. And that I did not hold to that. I was burnt out after finishing the first book. Mm. I think it's because I wrote the whole book it was such a short time that I was still kind of processing it. And I also didn't take the time to edit it and really finish it at that time, which, you know, and since then I have. And also, I guess, so I dictated 80,000 words in Shadow Prince, right? And then I had to throw it all out because it was the wrong book.
Oh, no.
Were
you able then to use it again with something else? Or
no, those words are totally dead. They were basically a Marvel movie that I didn't want to publish.
Oh, that's painful.
It was not good. It was because I got caught up in telling the same kind of story as the first book. And this is like episodic high fantasy.
Right.
So the new character was completely different. It wasn't going to work that way. And I literally had because I usually have this list of things I want to put in the book when I start. And none of that stuff ended up in there the first time I wrote Shadow Prince. So I'm like, no, this is awful. I don't like this. And so I threw that book out. That book's out now. I dictated another 100,000 words for it eventually. But that just came out last November. So it tells you in November 2020.
Yeah.
So that tells you how long it took to actually finish that book.
That's a bit of a while.
I did some ghostwriting. I dictated other stuff in that time period, but it took almost a whole year to publish it. And so I realized this isn't going any faster. So this is where the story gets kind of weird. Because I know most people who switch to dictation don't go back. I mean, like my buddy Paul Sading, he dictates. He did 13,500 words like last week on one day. You know, he does 7,000 words a day regularly, but he does it so it's clean. I'm not that good at it, apparently.
Nice.
You know, he takes the time. He doesn't go as quick as I do per hour, but he gets it done anyway. And his books are decent. You know, they work. They come out good. Mm-hmm. At least at that stage, they're much better than what I would make. So, Though I will say, I took the time to edit Shadow Prince, and that was another one where it took, you know, 140 hours to edit this book. Even the new version that was good.
Yeah, it's still pretty good. The way I generally do is I'll get through, and I write exceptionally clean first draft copy. But because of the kinds of books I write, I always have trouble with continuity. The continuity pass is just brutal because I have to be super focused, and Kitty goes over it and I go over it. And we always find like 1,000 little things. And because it's spy thrillers or mysteries or stuff where the continuity really, really matters, it still takes forever.
Yeah, I and even though I'm writing, you know, epic or high fantasy, I don't, my points of view are, they're relatively small, or few, they're relatively few points of view in each of these books, 5 or 6 sometimes, but not like your Cabra Con stuff.
Luxury. By any means. Oh God.
Yeah. I prefer a single point of view book, to be honest. I prefer writing single point of view books.
Oh, I do too.
And my longest book is a single point of view book, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, my mystery series and the Suave Rob series are all basically single points of view, and those write so much easier. But the multiple points of view are so much fun because you can play with information flow, and screw with the audience in much more interesting ways.
Absolutely. I love dramatic irony, and I miss out on that when I write single point of view, but that's basically the only thing I miss out on.
Yeah.
I love everything else about single point of view so much more.
I hear you, man.
In December, I decided to try some typing because I hadn't typed any fiction in a year and a half at that point. Mm-hmm. And I tried it, and I was typing 50 words a minute. I'm like, oh, that's new. Because normally I only do 25.
Oh,
in the
wow.
In the past, I doubled my rate of typing. And I hadn't typed in 18 months. So what happened? I don't know. But that's what I'm like, okay, maybe I don't need to dictate anymore. Dictation is so rough. Takes so long. To edit that, and when I typed that fast, you know, it would take me, and this is the main time saver, you know, when I say 140 hours to edit Shadow Prince, I'm not kidding, that was a huge book. And it took me, along with, you know, another 30 to actually dictate it, whatever, plus the draft that I threw out. So, but that's still almost 200 hour book, and for me that's really that's a really sloggy process. Whereas, like, even and that's 100,000 words. That's not 120,000. You know, it's pretty short for an epic fantasy. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, if I could go back and get the best of both worlds, type fast enough that I'm only going about half the rate of dictation versus a quarter of it. Well, then dictation stops looking so attractive. As long as I can put my butt in the chair enough.
Right, because then you get a much cleaner copy, and you don't have to spend all that time editing.
Yes, but by day, it's still faster to dictate. If I go by day count, but by hour count, it's actually more efficient to type.
Gotcha.
By a lot, because it only takes me about an hour to edit every chapter usually. And there's 50 chapters in the book. So you can do the math, you know, that's a third of or a half the time it would take me to edit the same book by dictation. And it only twice as long to type it. So it's still less than 100 hours usually per book. And these aren't short. They're 120,000 words, nice length books. But and I'm still running this problem. This is where I run into the problem, and I'd be asking for help. Is I just have a hard time putting my butt in the chair. You know, I mean, that's why I started doing a lot of weird stunts just to get me to sit down, like going on, like literally broadcasting my writing stream to Twitch or whatever, you know, my desktop, and they can see what I'm doing. So if I stopped writing, I'm like, you know, they see it, and not many people are watching. But just the threat of that is very cool. It's very useful. On the other hand, it also really inhibits the feeling that I was, and that's the other reason I stopped dictating. There's the same kind of thing. Because I'm in this, the place I live, people can always hear me if I'm dictating.
So you feel like you got people juggling your elbow all the time.
In fact, yes. And it's not like, I can get privacy visually, but not audibly. Especially because I'm a loud dude. So when I talk, like when I'm on a podcast, everyone knows I'm podcasting because they can hear it. And when I would dictate, I'd want to be alone in the house. So COVID hits. Probably one of the big reasons I stopped. I got so slow at dictating because it used to be that no one would be in the house half the day and I could just do all my work then. But now everybody is in there, and COVID was a real, roll with the punches, but it's a real blow to me. Because I got so self-conscious in the new book, the book I'm dictating, I dictated the first 30,000 words of it and said, I need to type this, is the third epic fantasy book. And it is I wanted it to be more kind of intimate and have more of this kind of uncomfortable scenes in it. And I had a hard time dictating those.
Right. Especially where people can hear me.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather type them, get my, but I'm also then, but I guess just in general, trying to measure the time output, the word output per minute is actually pretty insane. I should stop doing that. That's mm-hmm. one of the other conclusions I've reached mm-hmm. for me, is that saying like, I'm doing 50 words a minute. I mean, that's cool. It's also really a high bar. I don't always do that. I very rarely do it, in fact.
Right.
40, 30 or 40, yeah, that's pretty reasonable. But 50, that's insane. That's a lot of words. That's like double what I should be doing. And I know people can type 100 words a minute. There's people like Marissa Lingen, who I've had on my podcast, who have a typing speed of 100 words a minute, but then still say typing a 60,000 word book in 4 days, like Michael Moorcock would do back in the day, it requires cocaine or whatever. Because you need to be kind of nuts to do it. And that's true. And also, I mean, I guess, the other thing for me that's really big here, and I keep saying that because I have patterns of speech just like everyone, but is the thing where I need to cut loose. I need to feel like I can be free, yes. you know, and write whatever I want, and whatever needs to go in the book goes in the book. And that's how I got to 50 words a minute. It was a different feeling. And that's how I got to, you know, any good amount of word output. It's just like, mm-hmm. well, this is the scene. Let's write it down. And that's flow, I guess. Flow state, yeah. that kind of thing. And hard to do with dictation, though. Hard to get there with
dictation. I was so anxious
with dictation.
Oh, man. I was going to ask. I mean, you were turning out so much when you're dictating, but you're not hitting a flow state?
Well, I don't think so. Well, occasionally I did. There were a couple of short stories I did that with, but where I dictate the whole story in 1 hour or whatever. I just set the timer and go. Mm-hmm. And then I try to wrap it up in the last 10 minutes after the hour expired, usually. But no, I didn't get there. I didn't get there very often. I was getting there less and less toward the end, too, because I realized how hard it was to fix it, to make it good later. And the big problem was that I wasn't getting in flow state because I didn't enjoy it the way I enjoy typing.
Yeah,
I didn't get to see the words appear. There was no, and I was always under pressure because I'd go for 60 minutes or 30 minutes. I'd be on a timer. I'd be on the clock the whole time just so I can measure how many words I got at the end. And if I stopped, I'm like, oh, I'm losing speed. I'm this is going to hurt my numbers. I better go back. I was very motivated by that. But it didn't make, but I shouldn't have worried so much about it. I shouldn't worry so much about it now. It's all about, for me, it's button chair time that matters more. And if I'm able to dictate for 3 hours a day instead of two, I mean, that might've actually made up for it. I could do 18,000 words a single day, you know, and then boom, but I could never get more than two, basically. Maybe one day I got 2.5, you know, it was extremely intense to do it. It was just the funny thing. And I felt like I was performing the whole time. I'd even find myself doing the voices. So I did get sucked into the story.
Well, that's good.
But I also would forget everything because I'm not as a verbal learner as much as I'm a reader, I guess. And when I read something,
make a difference.
I'm especially if I have to imagine hearing it first and then write it down. Here, yeah, I see it. It's going to stick with me.
Right. Because you got at least one more loop in there, if nothing mm-hmm. else.
Yeah. There's an extra loop. Yeah, exactly. So, There's a lot of issues with the word with dictation, but they're just quite different experiences for me. And for now, I prefer typing. But I mean, I'm still tempted. I pick up the voice recorder to record because I record podcasts walking around town sometimes.
Uh huh.
And it is funny because I use the same voice recorder I'd be dictating on. And I'm like, mate, what if I knock out some fiction right now? Would anyone even know? I could get away with it. You know,
double it up with your writing and with your walking time.
No, I walked a ton, so it's That's the other reason I thought dictation might be good, but dictating outside rendered an awful file that was really, really hard to get anything out of.
Oh no.
not that bad, but I was slower. Less words.
Gotcha.
It was less words and there were more mistakes. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because so also I've got this Midwest accent.
It wasn't audio quality. It was mind flow type of stuff.
It might have been audio quality for some of the mistakes, but otherwise it was, definitely mind flow and possibly breathing. Because you got to do that when you're walking.
Yeah, unfortunate thing about exercise.
Though I'll admit, I very rarely sat down and dictated. I almost always was standing up pacing around. So it wasn't that different. It's just the wind probably got in my way more than anything.
Makes sense.
That's basically my story. I guess if I had any recommendations for dictation, is definitely, I think the do's that I'd say are definitely get a voice recorder or use your phone, whatever you choose to do, record it somewhere other than your computer. Cause it's just a lifesaver. And especially if you're a discovery writer, I found that if I had my notes in front of me, I do have a few notes for my story. And I thought, and if I had the notes, it cut my speed by like 30%. So I had to literally go up there without the notes. And it was like stand up or like a play or something. Like, oh, I just have to remember the lines or whatever I was planning to do.
Yep.
Anyway, but definitely use a voice recorder if you can. Dragon, naturally speaking, works pretty well, but you have to teach it all the words if you're doing fantasy. So I don't really recommend it for that.
Yeah, gotcha.
I mean, there's lots of people who will tell you how to use Dragon better or use other dictation software better. I'm not, I just have my first-hand experience with dictating fiction is that it is actually harder than it seemed at first. And it results in more work down the road, but that's just me. I personally don't think, because I know people who do it and they're very successful with their output. You know, people who've done like 300,000 words already, and it's only March this year. Okay, I'm very jealous now.
We don't like those people.
No, we like those people too much. We want to be them.
That's true.
I want those numbers anyway. I'm happy with most of the other things.
I'm staring down. I just finished the continuity reflow for volume 3 of the Cabracon book, and I'm jumping into volume 4 day after tomorrow. I'm now halfway through the series.
Such a huge series.
Yeah, I'm halfway. I'm half a million words in. I've got half a million words to go.
Probably. That's huge.
Somewhere between 300,000 and half a million. And I'm like,
so have you written all those words? I forgot. You're looking very, very stressed out thinking about it, but you've written all those. So that's
good. I'm halfway through. So I've written half of it.
Oh, okay. So you still have half a million words to write.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's looking huge. That's quite a mountain to look at.
Yeah, not just that, but the volume 3 ends on such a fever pitch that I'm now officially worried that I'm going to be able to hold interest after what I just did. So
it's gonna be like game, like the Song of Ice and Fire series, maybe.
Yeah,
after the third book, it just plummeted for a lot of people.
People who've read it have compared it to Song of Ice and Fire. I've never read Song of Ice and Fire, but yeah,
me neither. Honestly, not my thing.
I'm determined not to commit to the kinds of errors I saw in the TV show, though.
Well, the TV show is a special thing, but you people can hear me talk about that elsewhere. There's some special problems there. Episode of a podcast where people would... It was the New Year's Eve live show for Go Indie Now, mm-hmm. where I was on there, and they just like, what do you think about this? I'm like, okay, so this is about me now. Because they'd heard me on another show mention it. I'm like, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just this brutal. Yeah, so I had to explain to people why I thought it was insane how badly it fell apart, you know.
And the minute they introduced time travel, I stopped watching for the story and I started watching to see how bad it would get.
Wait a minute, they had time travel on that show?
They did. Bran, it turned out, could project himself.
He could see the future. He could go back in time, basically.
And he could control people's actions in the past.
Yes, so I guess that is technically time travel. You're right,
At which point, there's no point to any of it anymore.
Yes, he is like a demigod. He could undo the whole thing.
If he doesn't manipulate things in such a way as to... undo the things he
I don't know if you watched much about it. I don't think he ever did it again, which is the other funny thing about
it. Well, yeah, and you can't open that door and then not walk through it. And so, yeah, I was like, nope.
Yeah, I mean, that's the J.K. Rowling time turner thing. Like, come on. I mean, like, that. Admittedly, that's a fun set piece in that one book. It's a disaster area for the study.
Why would you not use it when you're taking down wizard Nazis? I mean, really.
You literally are fighting wizard Hitler. Come on.
Yeah.
Use the damn time travel. And there's enough whining here. But honestly, that's one of the reasons. I mean, honestly, time travel is one of those things. Like, I just don't want to see that most of the time. That's not my thing.
And there's a few instances where it's been done so well that there is no point in doing it again.
Yeah, or like Terminator. Like, the Terminator is really fun for that. Yeah, I mean,
The Terminator did a wonderful iterated time travel loop, which is wonderful. I don't know if you saw Predestination, but that's
a I listened a bit of your Predestination back.
No. There's a Ethan Hawke film. Ethan Hawke film called Predestination. It's based on an old pulp era short story that's a perfect closed loop.
I think I've heard of this. Maybe did you mention this on the show recently?
I did. We did a commentary track on it. It was as our most recent commentary, though. I think I haven't uploaded it yet. I need to make sure.
Well, then we got
buried, but yeah, it's gonna. If it's
not, I got to time travel. I got to go to the future and find it.
Yep.
Anyway,
and then Back to the Future, of course, did a wonderful, wonderful set. But it's been done so well that it's very difficult to pull it off and make it worthwhile.
Right. There's only so many stories you can tell with time travel. It's one of the weird things, the funny things about it. It's actually a very limiting story technique MacGuffin or whatever magic system.
And if you introduce it and you don't let it take over your whole story, how can it not? Cheap.
Yes.
Yeah, it's completely cheap. It's like introducing nuclear weapons and not having it change geopolitics, right?
That's why World War II is like the real world epic fantasy novel. That's my actual theory of why epic fantasy started, because it's like, we have the biggest war you can imagine. We have the biggest war you can imagine, and then it ends with the world changing completely. Okay, yeah. That is an epic fantasy
too. Yeah,
yeah, forever. Yeah.
No matter what happens with global orders changing after this point, things that happened during World War II will always be in play. Nuclear weapons, geography having different meanings than it used to, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of this, it's like when they did, it's actually a lot like the Terminator franchise, because you got T1, mm-hmm. but T2 is like, okay, this is a different thing completely. It's like, we're going to go bigger, there's going to be more shit going on, and anyway, it's silly.
The Terminator 2 of the World War.
No, it's actually not. It's more like, but it is the sequel. It is like the sequel going bigger, and then it also has this capstone, which is as horrible as anything anyone could ever imagine. It changes the entire world forever, which is, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, that's basically the end of what is it, like any epic fantasy series that where they saw it.
Yep. That's right. So that's Dictation. Works for and some other people, things. Not for other people. And for Tim, it worked well enough to not do again, which is a very interesting middle.
Well, round. I mean, who knows? Maybe I'll do it again. I'm beginning to think that because that's the addendum to be continued, just like World War I. Anyway,
you have made your Versailles Treaty with Dragon, naturally speaking.
For now. Yeah. For now. We're going to go our separate ways.
Oh boy. Oh, thank you so much for coming on, Tim. It's always
you're welcome. I hope it didn't talk your ear off too bad.
Oh, yeah. That's the fun of it. That's the fun of it.
There's a bunch of podcasts I've wanted to be on, and this is one of them. So you do a great show, Dan.
Oh, thank you. And you send in great questions, so it's always a pleasure. And I'm glad I got to have you on finally.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, my show is always open. But when you get a new fiction book out, especially, that's where we kind of specialize talking about that stuff.
Yeah. I've got
that's a live after reading, by the way.
Yeah,
if anyone's interested.
Yeah, that's a good plugzilla. Plug your stuff, Tim. I didn't even introduce you with your last name. This is Tim.
Tim Niederreiter.
Niederreiter. Okay.
It's pronounced Niederreiter. Which is nice. Quite fitting for me, but no one else in my family.
Called Tim Niederreiter.
Exactly. And that's actually my website is timniederreiter.com, spelled NEEDAWRITER.com.
Appropriate, since
I also mental seller publications.com. Yeah, exactly. And then my other stuff, all my stuff's on Amazon right now. And you can get the print books elsewhere, but I'm currently exclusive with Amazon, which is not turning out super well. So my days there are numbered. Let me put it that way. I've got a number of epic fantasy books out. I mentioned a couple of them on the show. And even though there was a fiasco around the production of actually both of them, they're both good now. So people should go read those if they like epic fantasy.
Cool.
And I have about 9 other books out, but I'm not going to rattle
off those names. You also, in addition to the ghostwriting and the epic fantasy, you also do science fiction. And is it also MIL-SF or?
No. I couldn't do MIL-SF. Right. The first book was mistaken for MIL-SF in my original writing crew.
Okay, that's why I was...
Because there's all these ranks and stuff. It does take place in a military context, but it's not MIL-SF because the main character is in military.
Gotcha.
And I thought that was really fun. That's Origin of Storms. This is also a reference to a Blue Oyster Cult song, but never mind. never mind that one. Origin, but it also is a perfect name for that book, so... Origin of Storms, which is one of my pillar universe novels, which is maybe the weirdest universe I ever created. And that's a, but that's a story for another day. Again, we're going to have an addendum there. And I create a few, some weird universes, mind you. I know we all do, but the one that's physically different than all the other, the sci-fi setting that doesn't have planets or stars in, that's the one that people are going to say, how does that even work?
Doesn't it's inevitably have planets the question. And stars? Nice.
Nope, no planets or stars. It is a different physical geography.
That's fascinating.
And physics, different physics altogether, actually.
That's yeah. fascinating. I may have to check
But that don't worry, out. There are still people in it somehow. Human cool. beings exist.
Well, it's the indomitability of the human spirit.
Yeah, everyone, it's funny too, because most of the reviewers will go on there like, it's like a far future or something. I'm like, nope, completely different universe. But that's okay. You can go on thinking that as long as you enjoy the book, which people seem to. anyway, excellent. Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Thanks for coming on, Tim.
Oh, well, one last thing. You can find me on Twitch nowadays. Right. If you want to watch me actually, my current writing process, at least such as it is, you can find me on Twitch at 7 Eastern is when I'm going to be starting from now on, every weekday and possibly on the weekends as well. We'll see. We'll plan it by ear on the weekends. But 7 a.m. every weekday is when I start writing.
Oh, boy.
Eastern time. And so it's pretty early for some people. And then I go for an hour or two.
The word masochism springs readily.
No, I'm a morning person.
Okay.
Who knows? I might be starting as early. Today, I've been starting at 8 Eastern normally. I am in the central time zone. So it's 7 my time.
Yep.
But I want to start. I want to get started. It's starting at 6 Central from now on.
And I'm a because night owl. My prime hours are about 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah, we can work in shifts then. You know, you're up because that you go to sleep. I get up. Because I mean, it used to be like that's funny because actually my writing story started in high school and that's why I started writing at 4 in the morning originally because I had to go to school
right before you go to school. Yeah. Right.
And that's how I got my first 4 books done in high school.
Nice.
They're garbage, but you know, I guess.
Hey, well, yeah, I only got 1.5 books done in high school, so you got me beat.
But aren't your books 150,000 words long, like you were saying? Or were these different books?
The ones I did in high school wound up being about 70,000 long, each of them.
Oh, okay. That's about what I was doing too. But anyway, you can cut all this stuff because this is silly. I don't know how to shut up. This is how Minnesotans say goodbye.
There's literally high school students who are starting out who are listening and hearing us talk about this could encourage them a bit. So,
well, definitely do it because your books aren't necessarily going to be good when you're a teenager. In fact, they probably aren't. But that's exactly what I felt at the time. I said, people have been telling me that for years. They'd be like, your book sucks. You're a teenager. Yep. By the time I was, 19 or whatever, I wrote the first book that I would eventually publish. Mm-hmm. People, I already kind of knew being a teenager it was a very limited perspective, which is why those books are usually inadequate to the task of entertaining adults. But it is worth doing because the experience is just unbeatable. And you have time at that point.
I had the first story I wrote where I knew I finally hit it out of the park was The Coffee Service. And I wrote it in an hour and a half. And I had been writing for on and off for, 15 years at that point. I was 21 years old, 22 years old. And I've been trying to write since I was like 5. And the experience was so different. I got it done and I was like, I didn't know my mind could do that. And I didn't hit that point again for another 4 years. But at that point, I had a taste of it and I knew what it felt like to write something that was complete in and of itself. And so, I knew what feeling
you'd reach for the stars and you had a guide point there at that point. You'd left a mark.
Yeah. And a lot of, not everybody, but a lot of writers I've talked to early in their career, they had 1, 2, 3, 4 stories where it all clicked, but they weren't experienced enough yet to make it click on purpose. And so they had to just keep chasing it. But eventually they got to the point where they could make it click on purpose.
Yeah. The first story where that happened to me was, probably my 19-year-old story. My novel, Orphan Mage, which I wrote when I was 19 originally. Mm-hmm. That was my previous fastest novel, too. So it does tie in a little bit to the speed thing, where I'd written that in about 3-4 weeks originally. Cool. Yeah. And and that's out now, of course, because people can find my books. I pimp my books. It's what I do. I'm a writer.
Excellent. Yep. Yeah. The coffee service is the earliest story that I ever wrote that is available on the market, and it's still one of my favorites.
I should go read that. How long is it?
About 2,500 words, 3,000 words.
Oh, perfect. I'm such a slow reader nowadays.
Yeah, it's
that's the funny thing. I can type faster than I can read now. It's insane.
No, it was the result of watching Psycho 4, and something about Psycho 4 was niggling at the back of my brain, and so I sat down to write, and I scared the shit out of myself. But it works.
Isn't that the best way to do it?
Isn't that just the best?
Yeah. You know, I honestly. That's the thing I miss about most of my stories. I just want to get scared. I want to feel like I'm not even a horror writer. I don't write horror. And yet people will say the most memorable scenes I wrote are either the really sad ones or the really scary ones.
They're ones when you pull something out of yourself that intimidates you, whatever the emotion is. If you're pulling something out of yourself that intimidates you, you know it's going to bowl the reader over.
Yeah, that's one to grow on. I can shut up now if you want.
Yeah, we probably ought to wrap because it's a long episode, and there's going to be a few long episodes this week. So,
ooh,
yeah, I just interviewed Mark Jeffrey last night, all things about cryptocurrency and some of the stuff coming down the pipe that will allow writers to set up censorship-proof marketplaces for themselves. Mm-hmm. So, that's going to be nice. All right, let's wrap it up. I've been J. Daniel Sawyer.
And I've been Tim Niederreiter my whole life.
There you go. And thanks for joining us. And I at least will see you all tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty McKeon and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2021 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2021 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.
Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.